Well, good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. Today is Wednesday, May 18th. It is just after 10 o'clock, and I call this meeting to order. First of all, I want to wish my colleagues and everybody in the audience and everybody listening a happy belated Setna Mai. It was Norwegian Independence Day yesterday, and hey, you're ahead of me, and you're not even Norwegian. Good job, Randy. Did you have lutefisk for breakfast?
No, ma'am.
Lefse? Potato klub?
Nothing like that.
All right. Well, I actually have a whole group of Norwegians coming to North Dakota in about 3 weeks. My ancestors, who are currently living on the land that my grandpa grew up on before he moved to America and settled in Parshall, North Dakota. And so they're coming here for the first time. And we're going to be running them around North Dakota and the Medora. And they've never even been to the U.S., so it's really kind of neat that we're going to be actually having a Setna Mai celebration, only it'll be a little bit delayed in our family's case. So just in terms of opening comments, I just want to give a little pre-note about our informal hearing this afternoon. We are having Xcel Energy in this afternoon to walk through in more detail the outages that occurred the last couple of weeks. It's been a little quiet now for the last week or so, but there was a rash of them, I think 7 or so outages in a row there. So we're really going to dig down and find out, you know, more information from the company about what they think has gone wrong, what really are some of the fixes. We're going to talk about their O&M expenses and plans for the next year. We'll talk about this unjacketed cable that we know is a cause, get more specifics on where all that is located and what their replacement plans are, and really dig into what we can do and what we can help support the company on to improve the reliability in Fargo. So that will be broadcast on our normal avenues, as well as being open to the public if anyone cares to attend. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Chrisman.
Had a very interesting trip last week. Right after our hearing in Killdeer, I drove to Grand Forks and went to the EERC's seminar that was called Energizing North Dakota's Future. Had really a large array of energy people there, oil people, coal people, wind people, and it was really an interesting day. And one of the things that was discussed that I guess is obvious, but I hadn't really thought of in this perspective or this level of clarity, was how in the last probably 5 to 10 years, the argument against fossil fuels has gone from an argument for CO2 reduction to an argument for fossil fuel elimination. And when that was pointed out, I thought, you know, how true that it really has made a dramatic switch. And so certainly something to keep in mind. A lot of good thoughts and ideas shared. Heard from Mr. McConnell, who's been here and talked to us in the past, and he was very good. Next week, I will be gone the early part of the week. I will be going to a destination that we all strive to get to at some point, you know, one of those things on the bucket list, Kingsport, Tennessee, for the Southern States Energy Board. I'll be speaking there. So Commissioner Kalk has done that in the past, and I'm going to do it this year, and I'll be talking about North Dakota regulation of fossil fuels, and you know, because they have much different techniques and practices and resources than ours, and so I guess they want to learn more about what we do up here. So,
cool. So and will you be covering more than coal? Obviously, you'll cover oil and gas. And
although this is mostly a coal
thing,
I will be touching on the oil and gas a little bit and wind, but mostly this will be about coal and what we've been doing, what I foresee, and those types of things.
All right. Excellent. Commissioner Kalk, what's the latest tally and how many attendants in my very interesting tour at the MARC is?
The North Dakota Public Service Commission is proud to be hosting MARC 2016, June 12th through the 15th. And the one of the highlights will be the tours on Tuesday afternoon, where Commissioner Fedorchak will be taking out a tour to the Bakken area. Commissioner Crispin will be touring the Dakota gasification plant as well as coal country. And I'm going to do the DCN building as well as some UAV applications. As of this morning, Commissioner Fedorchak's tour is twice the attendance of my tour and Commissioner Crispin's tour. But as my astute colleague Commissioner Crispin pointed out, that our screening process is much more robust than Commissioner Fedorchak's. So we really have, like, it's like getting into college, right?
Well, somebody has to take anyone with a heartbeat.
But on that, the MARC planning is going really well. There's one question we'll have for discussion about the sites the bus trips can go, but that's going really nicely. Just a couple add-ons. Julie, you talked about the Norwegians coming down to your house for the first time. I also have a group of Norwegians coming to my house later this summer. It's called my aunts and uncles. So I'm excited about them coming down. You were asking about the Southern States Energy Board. I had the chance to go down there last year, and it's a group that's similar to the Lignite Energy Council, except it covers a whole slew of southern states. They actually have a congressional appropriation that's working on fossil fuels, and they're very interested in what we do up here with lignite coal and dry fining and the alum cycle. And last year I talked about it in a general sense, but this year I think Commissioner Crispin, they're really excited to have him to come down there because of his legislative background as well as his time in the commission, because a lot of things they're trying to look at now is things they can do in state legislatures, which will similar to what we've done in North Dakota. So that's why I think they sought out our esteemed colleague to come down and talk about that. So I think that's a great chance to continue to highlight what North Dakota is doing. Your comments about Xcel Energy, I think spot on the mark. The one thing that I still have not figured out, and the focus I'll ask them, is that why are these challenges unique to Fargo? I mean, if they were doing something system-wide, you'd think you'd see problems in Minot and Grand Forks, but it always seems like Fargo. And I don't know if it's tied back to the flooding. I don't know if it's tied back to something that they're doing differently there, but it seems like their plans, how they do their O&M, how they do everything is similar in Fargo, Grand Forks, and Minot. So that's, I think, the way I'll set it up is my opening comments for that. And other than that, I just look forward to a good meeting. And now that it's summertime, watch for motorcycles when you're out there.
All right. We have a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. I do not have any items on the agenda today, so I'll invite Commissioner Crispin to get started on his.
Okay, RC1, I move the commission execute a contract with B&C Concrete Pumping Incorporated in the amount of $1,238,475 for drilling and pressurized grouting for the 2016 Wilton Phase 2 AML project.
Second.
In mid-February, the AML division issued an invitation for bids for drilling and pressurized grouting for this project. The AML division estimates that 20,000 feet of rotary drilling will be needed this year, that 3,500 feet of casing will be used when mine voids are found, and that 7,500 cubic yards of grout will be needed to fill the voids. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used. The bid opening was held on April 7th, and two bids were received. The low bid was received from B&C Concrete Pumping of Williston in the amount of $1,238,475. The other bid was $1,298,000, so very close, about just under $60,000 difference. The AML division's cost estimate for this project was $1,387,000, so they actually both came in under our estimate. The notice of intent to award a contract to B&C Concrete Pumping was sent to both bidders. The other bidder did not appeal the intent to award. And on April 19th, the contract was sent to B&C to execute. The signed contract has been returned, and we have also received performance and payment bonds, the certificate of liability insurance, and other materials that were requested. And so the contract is ready for execution by us.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
See, Randy, I always think it's worthwhile to revisit, since this is sort of the first AML project for this season, how these projects are funded. And so I know you understand that better than I. Would you mind going through that in terms of the tax and the reimbursement from the feds and that sort of thing?
There's a tax on coal nationwide, and the amount varies. I think on North Dakota lignite, it's about 8 cents per ton that goes into this federal program. This is set to expire in a few years, I think in about 2022. I'm looking over at Bill to see if 21. So hopefully that will be renewed. It's a great project, then that money comes. It's not like all North Dakota's money stays here. There's minimum amounts, and actually, I think we get more back than what our lignite industry probably pays in per year. We are a minimum amount state, and so we get about $3 million. But because of the sequester, we've actually been getting less than that the last couple of years. An important program, and it's one of those things that I like to highlight, not so much the details of it, but the fact that it's my understanding that years ago when this was created, the coal industry was very supportive of the idea of paying this tax. And it's not that most of the companies today are the companies that did things that caused the problems. Most of those were small operations that have long since ceased operations and aren't contributing. But as a responsible industry, they want to see, you know, an ability for us to fix problems and hopefully, in most cases, prevent problems. And that's a lot of what we do with this drilling like this. We know that there's voids down there, and we seek them out, and especially near highways or buildings or things. Oftentimes, we can find them and prevent the sinkhole before it becomes a sinkhole and causes someone's building to collapse or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a neat program, and it's an example of the industry pays the tax. They are doing so to make amends for things that were done probably in a way that they didn't know any better back then, but now we know what the problems were, so they're fixing past problems, but then also we're subcontracting with private industry to do the work. So it's not, you know, government isn't doing the work itself. So this is dollars that goes back to the private sector for doing a lot of the work. So I think it's just a win for all around, and I appreciate the good oversight that our team offers and expertise in running a really, really great program. So thanks, Bill.
Well, as far as our own group, I was going to save that till after the second one, but now I'll add to what you just said, and another point that I hadn't thought about before but should be brought out. Yes, our team does a great job. This is a part of this agency that just runs so smoothly, and I appreciate Bill and your team up there. Very few problems or headaches, and it's fun to go to I always like to sit in on the bidding because I guess my past, I like contractors and that type of thing, and see them come in and they lay out their proposals, and we go through and open them up, and they see who's the low bidder and who's not, and usually wind up congratulating the low bidder amongst themselves, and it's just a good process that's really wholesome and fair to everybody, and so I appreciate the work that our team does up there. I was also going to say, for public information, you know, there's, I suppose you can think of this in many different ways, but I kind of generally categorize these AML projects into two things. One are old underground mines where one day you go out there and it's nice prairie or a nice field, and the next day you come out and there's a big sinkhole, and it's just an underground void that at some point eventually it might collapse. The other is the large spoil piles that we see around in a few locations. It was more work done like in the 40s and 50s and 60s when they started having bigger equipment and actually surface mining, but they didn't reclaim the land. I always like to point out North Dakota actually adopted a surface mine reclamation law before the federal government ever did. So we were very proactive in that way back in the early 70s, thanks to North Dakota leadership and North Dakota's love and concern for the land. But I also am always cautious to not be critical of those people back in the 50s and 40s. They didn't have the science. They didn't have the equipment to be able to move dirt around as much as we do. Frankly, they wouldn't have been able to afford their heat and power had they been expected to do all the reclamation we do. So it is kind of incumbent upon us to go back and we don't go restore those spill piles altogether, but if there's something close to a road, a high wall, or something that's eroding, we do go back and do some fixes in those areas as well from time to time.
Is there any further discussion?
I think Randy brought in the point I was going to highlight about that the technology has changed so much, and I just want to highlight that the grouting that we use has a varying amount of fly ash, and it really allows when they pour it in there to get out in all those nooks and crannies, but then when it hardens, it's good stuff. So it's another beneficial use to fly ash, and some of the federal rules right now, we always got to keep on that, because you use the coal and you can get a beneficial use like this. It's really win-win all the way around. But I think that part of technology has really helped out, too, in some of these projects.
Good point.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the commission execute a contract with GeoServe Incorporated in the amount of $43,985 for material testing and other services for the 2016 Wilton Phase 2 AML project.
Second.
So this is the same project again, but again in mid-February, we issued the invitation for bids. And in addition to the actual drilling and grouting, this separate contract is issued to test the grout, including its strength and batch plant inspections. The competitive sealed bidding procedures were used again. The opening was also held on the 7th, and again there were two bids received, but different companies. The low bid was GeoServe Incorporated of Bismarck in the amount of $43,985. The other bid was $49,650. And our cost estimate for the project was $52,000. So, again, we're seeing this come in just a little lower than what we anticipated, and good news to help extend our resources to do these kinds of projects. The intent to award a contract to GeoServe was sent to both bidders. The other bidder did not appeal that intent to award, and on April 19th, the contract was sent to GeoServe for execution. The signed contract has been returned. We've also received performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and the other materials that were requested, so the contract is now ready for execution.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just maybe like to, Randy pointed out that the bids that came in were actually less than our estimate by a little bit. That's good to see, actually, because a few years ago when we would have our estimate for bids, because there was so much work going on in the Bakken with dirt moving, other type of things, that the companies that would do this kind of thing were out there doing different work, so our bids were coming in much higher than we anticipated. Now it seems like we've switched back the other way, so that's good for what we're doing. So it's, you know, there's always benefits and pros and cons to everything. So I'll just point that out, that the bids are now coming in underestimate because I think change is out in the oil field.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-197, canceling warehouse license number 1307. Issued to FC Stone Merchant Services, LLC, at Northwood, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Northwood is discontinued.
Second.
On September 2nd of last year, the Commission approved FC Stone Merchant Services' license application. They filed the license application with the intention of purchasing soybeans for processing into oil at the processing plant at Northwood. On May 5th, we received a request to discontinue business. FC Stone notified the commission it never started business in North Dakota and never purchased any grain. Therefore, it had no grain receipt holders.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just point out, and I pointed this out previously, actually, probably when this license application was received last September with Northwood, and I would have done something different had it not been the day that we talked about earlier, yesterday, but Northwood actually has the highest percentage of Norwegian heritage people of any city in the United States. Yesterday being Setnamaya, I queued that up and wanted to reiterate it again. And when you have your Norwegian guests, you might want to take them to Northwood. They might find some more relatives there.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Northwood, motion is approved.
Northwoodonians? Must be really smart.
RC4, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-198, granting the request of Consolidated Grain and Barge Company of Savannah, Illinois, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota, effective June 1st of 2016.
Second.
Consolidated Grain and Barge Company filed the license application to operate beginning June 1st. The company was established in 1970 and originates and markets grain and oil seed from America's heartland for export and domestic channels. Consolidated projects it will purchase 200,000 bushels of grain annually in North Dakota and filed a $200,000 surety bond. They notified the commission they have not operated as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the roving grain buyer license be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved.
That concludes my agenda.
Excellent. Just to belabor the Norwegian point again. So I am almost all Norwegian, and my mom is 100% Norwegian. And so my mother collected Norwegian eggs over the years, and then she gave them to me. And so we have them all set up in a bathroom. Our kind of main floor bathroom has a couple shelves of different Norwegian jokes, like the Norwegian golf ball, which is square, and the Norwegian swing that has the pole in the middle. And oh, there's so many of them. It's just hilarious. And so my kids growing up would see all these, and everyone that goes in that bathroom looks at them and comes out laughing, you know, the flashlight with the match on the end, and you know the paint stick with the match on the end. So there's a whole bunch of them. So the kids, but my kids couldn't figure it out. Like, why is this funny? It's just stupid. And why are you proud of this, Mom? So they have always been really embarrassed. And sometimes my daughter will take them all and shove them in drawers before friends come over. So they've been embarrassed about this Norwegian humor and cannot for the life of them understand why it's so funny to make fun of how dumb you are. And so, not surprisingly, my kids think that they like to focus more on their Irish heritage because they think it's really cool to be Irish, and they hate it when I remind them that they're actually more Norwegian than Irish.
Well, as an enticement to them celebrating their Norwegian heritage, and I'm kind of guessing here a little bit now, but as I traversed from Kildare to Grand Forks last week, as I mentioned earlier, I went through that area by Northwood and came through Hatton. And first time I had ever stopped at the cemetery there north of Hatton and visited the arch, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, the Carl Ben Elfson
Eilson
Memorial. And I don't know if he'd be Norwegian or Swedish or what, but certainly some Scandinavian descent to be very proud of. Truly, truly a great North Dakotan and a great American.
Yeah, he is. He's neat. Their favorite gag is the two-hole outhouse, but the second hole is on top of the first hole.
I keep trying to bail you out and move around the gags and something great. But
I'm gonna save the worst one. You'll have to come to my house and see it. It's a Norwegian shower. I'll just leave it at that. Go ahead, Ryan.
The nice thing about us is no matter how long or short the agenda is, we can make it into 1 hour. Alrighty then.
Done.
We have two items left, but I forgot one comment I wanted to say in the opening remarks is to thank Commissioner Fedorchuk and Daryl for that rail meeting we had last week.
Oh, that's right.
The
yes.
Didn't get much coverage on it, and that's fine. That wasn't the point, but it was a really good meeting that Julie and Daryl, I know you guys set up, but we had all the class ones in. We had the short lines. We had shippers. We had producers, and everybody talked about what their concerns were, and we heard really nothing. It was all kumbaya. The reduction in oil traffic, I think, has given them also a break, but they're really focusing on, other opportunities to move our commodities and what it's going to look like and how all this investment has actually helped a lot of different things. So that was a good meeting. I wanted to thank you both on that because, when we have a rail challenges, it catches all kinds of great coverage. But when we have a meeting and everybody's happy, it just people sometimes don't notice that. But I thought it was good. And the big takeaway for me in that meeting was you've got much improved rail system now and waiting to see what happens in late summer and the fall as to what we can actually move these things to market. So, And our inspectors, I think, provided a lot of value added in that meeting. So thank you for setting that up. Okay, item BK1. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing and reduce the filing fee to $10,000 in Otter Tail Power Company's environmental cost recovery rider, case number PU16148.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Just as a point of clarification, Otter Tail has three riders that have come in front of us recently. The transmission rider that comes in usually late in December, we make a decision about that time. We have a case in front of us right now on the renewable rider that we had a work session yesterday, and this is the environmental rider. So for this particular motion today, it issues a notice opportunity for the environmental cost recovery tariff, and the rider provides for adjustments of rates to recover capital costs and operating expenses incurred to comply with federal mandates for environmental upgrades to its electric generation facilities using coal. Anyone requesting a formal hearing must do so by June 21st of this year. If there's no one requests a formal hearing, the commission can determine this without a hearing. I just want to the way this lays out right now is this current one, their existing rate is roughly 9.1%. They want to decrease the rate about 1.2%, which will reduce their costs for the average customer about $1.19 per month. But before my friends in the media go too far with that, I want to tie this back to some other cases that are in front of the commission. The case that I talked about with the renewable rider, we had a formal hearing on the renewable rider case. We had a work session on that yesterday. And the renewable rider, that actually is the discussion now is centering around a cost increase of about $3 a month for the renewable rider. And the reason I set this up is these cases are separate cases, but what's causing, in my opinion, some of the fluctuation is there's a federal tax credits that come into play for Otter Tail that they can use in differing areas. And in this particular case, what I've picked up is in our previous hearing on renewable riders, it was better for them to apply those cost tax credits in this environmental rider, and that's what their filings say now. So there's a notice set up for this hearing. They have till June 21st. But before we go out and say there'll be a decrease of cost for Otter Tail, there potentially will be some type for this environmental cost rider, but the renewable rider in front of us is asking for an increase of about $3. So we're working on both those cases. There certainly, I think the riders are a way to do business. I think it makes sense because we true them up every year. But one of the things that I'm becoming acutely aware of is how federal tax policy may cause some of the cost to shift between riders. At the end of the day, the customer will still pay the cost up or down. But I think I just wanted to clarify, this is just a notice opportunity for hearing, but I wanted to make sure that I laid the backstory on this. So everything's certainly in order, and we'll wait to see how it plays out with anyone requesting a formal hearing. But we did have the work session on the parallel case for the renewable rider yesterday, and I think that I see a path forward on this, but I just wanted to give the full background. I don't know if my colleagues have any thoughts, but it's certainly well in order for this motion today.
Did we have a motion, a second? Is there further discussion?
Whenever we talk about this, I think it's important to mention the big driver of this particular rider, and that is the Big Stone plant and the environmental upgrades that were added to that plant, required by the EPA, $385 million total additions to that plant with some of the emissions requirements and improvements. This is a place where you get a reminder that we're just now starting to pay for those costs. That's a 30-year payment schedule. And regardless of how much that plant is used, these costs have to be paid. And so if the plan to shut down because of EPA regulations, these costs will remain and customers will continue to pay for these things, but they just won't be getting any power in return for it. And so when those upgrades were made, it was made at a time where it was believed that coal was a good, solid, reliable, low-cost fuel source that could be counted on in, you know, for 30 years, and already how many years later we're seeing that that's a, it's a real threat and it's a real concern how long this plant will actually be able to stay in production with the really significant EPA rules that are being proposed. Actually, not even being proposed, that are in effect and waiting for action by the courts.
No, thank you, Julie, for pointing that out, because you hit the nail on the head. I forgot about that. This was created in the 2008-09 rate case to highlight those costs that are unique to this plant and the federal rules. Thank you.
And I would point out, when the decision was made that to make that investment, because it was believed that coal was a dependable and low-cost source of energy for the long term, it wasn't that that decision was wrong. It was that that obvious fact is being ignored in Washington, D.C.
Well, and the one point I wanted to highlight, the correlation of these two cases, I want to make sure that we get the right message to the Otter Tail customer, that there are riders that come in. We look at each one on a case-by-case basis, and for this particular year, there's some nuances in these two cases for the renewable rider and the environmental rider based on the way the tax credits were applied for the company. And I do believe the company applied the tax credits to keep the cost the lowest possible for the customer, but just how these two cases relate to make sure the message gets out there that it's not necessarily decreased. By the time we include the cost of the other rider, it may be an overall increase. So we'll probably our mid-June meeting, we'll see how that plays out.
Is there any further clear to customers in middle of June? Right now, it's still kind of in limbo.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And last but not least, item BK2. I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Cahoon Enterprise LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU15406.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In June of last year, Hess Corporation filed a North Dakota one-call complaint against Cahoon Enterprises of North Dakota. Cahoon is a company operating out of Ray, North Dakota, and Hess, of course, we're all aware of, is a North Dakota corporation with its main offices in New York City. The this case in particular, based on the investigation, staff concluded on June 23rd, Cahoon personnel provided an emergency excavation notice to North Dakota one-call system for work to begin on June 23rd. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that on June 24th, Cahoon personnel began an excavation as defined on North Dakota Century Code in Williams County. Luckily, no underground facilities were damaged during the excavation, but they were very close to Hess facilities. That's why Hess, of course, filed the complaint. There was no agreement. The excavation was not being made in time of emergency, is what our staff is recommending. And in this particular case, it's the Cahoon's first violation. The company, Cahoon, agrees to pay a $500 fine, North Dakota, payable immediately to the North Dakota Public Service Commission to go to the general fund. And everything certainly appears to be in order in this case. The one nuance I do want to point out in this case is, as we continue to, I don't know what the best word is, as we continue to, I guess, solidify or continue to understand all the different scenarios that can be developed out there with these one-call violations, in this particular case, the company called in an emergency ticket, and the background of an emergency ticket is if someone calls an emergency ticket, the one-call system does not make a determination of whether it's a valid emergency or not. They just get right out there. It's kind of like if somebody calls for an ambulance, the ambulance driver doesn't say, okay, is it really a heart attack? The ambulance driver goes out there, and then they assess it later on. Well, in this case, when someone calls an emergency ticket in, the one-call folks immediately do what they're doing. So in this case, you know, Hess got the call, an emergency one-call ticket. They stop what they're doing. They get out there and do the locate. They get out there, and Hess right away says, well, this is an emergency. You just forgot to call. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then the discussion gets quite robust between Hess Corporation and the company and ends up being a complaint filed with us by Hess. And when our staff went through this, that's kind of the way it played out. And I think that the company Cahoon really had a good learning opportunity on this, and I think the consent order certainly is appropriate. But also, too, I commend Hess Corporation for keeping a close eye on what's happening around their facilities, because this case worked out fine. I think it's a good learning opportunity. It's a good way to have the discussion with our excavators. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's good to see when companies keep an eye on what's going on around their facilities, because everybody talks about the importance of pipeline safety, which it is very important, but still the biggest cause of pipeline failure is third-party damages. And this case, I think, highlights the importance of companies keeping an eye on their facilities. So I certainly support this and thank Victor and Jack for doing their work on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'm not sure if I'm kind of assuming this is done, but if not, just an idea for the one-call people when they work with the contractors. Maybe a message that needs to be emphasized is that when there's this option for an emergency locate, that isn't just because it's an emergency to you, that there are clear guidelines for what is in fact an emergency. And it better fall into that, or it's inappropriate to be calling something as an emergency just because you forgot to call 48 hours in advance and you want to keep moving. So I don't know if they emphasize that, but it's, if not, it's another thing to add to the list.
No, thank you, Randy.
Meetings, I would say.
That was one of the findings, that the excavation was not being made in time of emergency. An emergency is defined in our code, what exactly creates the emergency. But to your point of highlighting that in some of our digger dinners or some of the other things that we have, we certainly, that's a great idea.
Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
All righty. Well, just to go through a little peek ahead, well, tomorrow we have a second work session on the Brady Wind project. We have next week a formal hearing on a Falkirk mining permit revision and another work session on Brady Wind. We scheduled two just to get them on the books, I think. And then in early June, we have two formal hearings, two wind farm hearings, new projects, Oliver Wind 3 and Brady Wind 2, just outside of Mandan and just outside of Dickinson. And then we're already into the MARC conference, so things are steaming ahead. All right.
Just while we have press people here, I think that Stacy did a pretty good job with our press release on it, but I just want to emphasize, because to me, I struggled back and forth with how to word that so that people who just real casually look over an article or listen to something or watch something, they don't miss it. When we refer to Oliver Wind 3, I fear people in Morton County think, well, that's something up north of Center where Oliver Wind 1 and 2 are, and don't pay attention. All but one of these turbines would be in Morton County. Mm-hmm. Thus, if we don't emphasize Oliver Wind enough so that the people in Morton County see it, would fear that the Oliver County people would think, well, the hearing's in Mandan, it must not be anything up here. Well, it does, in fact, include some of Oliver County, and the power line goes across a good part of Oliver County. So it's important to emphasize, I think, that it's something that heavily impacts both counties.
Very good. Okay, so any questions?
Yes. Commissioner Christman, the Northwood facility, it seems to be that is that the one that's had several owners over the past several years?
Yes.
As did the company say why they didn't get started?
I don't know that. I'll ask Sue here if they provided any information.
I think that there were some negotiations that didn't get resolved, and therefore they just never got started.
And the history of that was not a soybean plant. It was something else, correct?
I don't know that history. But
was it sunflower? Canola, okay, okay. Yeah. So at this point, the facility is empty.
Yeah.
And no offers to have a new owner or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of, but we probably wouldn't know until they'd be ready to file for a license.
Also, the Wilton project that you're talking about is a surface mining project, correct?
No, this is an underground.
Okay,
underground sinkholes that are developing.
Do you know offhand how many projects are still pending?
For the
old,
how many
AML?
Haven't been fixed? I bet, Bill, there is an inventory of those projects statewide. And
I'm not sure I understand what the question is.
Now, how many projects are pending? Yeah, are still active or
unfixed, basically,
undone.
Right?
Undone.
We have one contract that's a 2-year contract that's continuing on. Then we have these two that were executed today. Those will be the only 3 contracts we have pending. But we have a lot more work that could be done.
That's right, yeah.
In the event that the money keeps coming in.
Do you know how many, Bill, in that inventory? I know Jim had told me maybe a year ago how many were in that inventory that still could be.
We have a number of different inventories, but we have a list of abandoned mine points, and there's a little bit under 2,000 of them in the western part of North Dakota.
Sure.
They don't all represent areas where projects will be or are likely to be done, but they're that many points.
And, of course, they keep popping up. All of a sudden you find a new one gets reported somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Is it very often that they pop up that it's a completely unknown? Or are a lot of them on the inventory maybe just didn't know that they were going to be a problem or didn't have them identified for action?
Yes. Not very frequently that one comes up that we didn't know about.
Okay, good.
Occasionally that does, because there are some undocumented mines. But some of them that didn't seem like a high priority years ago through development or whatever may become higher priority and they need to have work.
Mm-hmm.
Or because of a sinkhole or something that occurs close to a house or a road.
I think some of the discussion is, as they were talking earlier about the 2021 date for the funding and how the timeline of funding availability based on project completion, when we get to where the money is, quote-unquote, not there, but there are still projects to be done, that'll be a key decision point about whether you go to use state funds and do it or you go back and there's federal funds. Because like states like Wyoming, I think they've changed some of what they're doing because all their projects are done, and there's just a lot of nuances down the road of how the funding will be there to the project need.
Well, and with several large national mining companies in bankruptcy proceedings, there's going to be a lot less coal mined in the future unless things change dramatically, and so there's going to probably be less money for this program.
That reminds me, there was a meeting in Cheyenne, Wyoming yesterday concerning future of coal in Wyoming. Is there anything scheduled for the lignite industry that you know of?
Well,
I guess it was talking about mining on federal lands more than anything else.
Yeah, and we're part of that whole picture, and had as part of the gathering up in Beulah with Assistant Secretary Janice Schneider, that subject came up as well. And, pretty much all of our mines here are up against some kind of federally owned coal reserves. And the mine at Center is probably the one that is most heavily being impacted right now by reserves that they don't have leases for that should be part of the operation here very quickly. And so that was brought up, and when they applied for those leases years ago, they were advised that it was about a 1.5 to 2 year wait, and now it's looking more like maybe 7 to 10 years. And I thought Congressman Kramer really had a interesting point that he made, in that the stream protection rule that we were up there specifically to discuss had, I think, a 60-day opportunity for comments, and then that was extended for 30 days. So I think it was probably 90 total to adopt a rule that would impact mines all across the country dramatically, and yet the same agency can't get leases done in less than 5 years, lease applications. So quite a contrast there. But yes, what they're discussing really impacts all of us.
Is there any other hearings that you know of that might be held in this area?
I don't think there's one closer than that.
I think there's one in Colorado coming up. And I'm not exactly sure who has been invited to those things.
Yeah.
Dave, if I could offer up some other cool things that are going on right now, is that on the Wyoming thing, Commissioner Brighton, we all know her very well. I talk with her a lot and kind of keep tabs of what's going on out there as it may relate to North Dakota. But one of the benefits of having Mark up here this summer is that we're getting a lot of commissioners from the Midwest states that are coming up here. Also, DOE, when I went on that China trip last year to look at their coal, DOE is bringing up a group of commissioners as well as other industry interests to come up and hit part of the MARC conference, but then go out and do a tour of Great River Energy's dry finding facility. I mean, that's what DOE is touting as one of their big successes, where it was long before there was the CO2 rules pending. The DOE offered up money. Great River Energy took that into the research and development. They built it big scale. They've had it in production now for over 6 years, and they're really marketing that dry finding around the country and around the world. They want to bring in more people and look at that as a technology that's out there and proven to reduce some of your emissions. And the second part of that tour is Secretary Dave Moeller. He's the Undersecretary for Fossil Fuels in DOE. He's coming up for Mark to be one of our speakers on Monday morning at the Belle Mayhus at 9 o'clock if you wanted to cover him. And then he is going to go out himself and his staff and do a tour of the dry finding facility for GRE, also get a full brief about the alum cycle from BNI and North American. And the hopes of what we're trying to piece together there is that at some point the state legislature, North Dakota's put money into the alum cycle. But at some point, you're going to have to build something big, and there needs to be some significant dollars put into play. So one of the hopefully takeaways for Secretary Mueller is that he gets buy-in on this so DOE could then fund the next phase of the alum plant, which captures 100% of the CO2. So there is a lot going on in lignite coal because he's a political appointee, but he's certainly a coal warrior inside the administration. And it's an opportunity to continue to highlight North Dakota coal. But one of the things that I've seen, circle back where Randy started with, there's a Southern States Energy Board that is still actively trying to keep coal alive in the country. And there's the North Dakota Lignite Council and North Dakota Industry that's actively trying to keep coal alive in the country. But I think that's about it. I don't see any other organizations or states really trying to spend money in the R&D and talk about the benefits. And it's a concern that people aren't doing this because at some point in time, the price of gas is going to go back up and all these other things. And we're going to really, I think, have missed the boat on not doing the R&D on coal. So I think there's a lot of good things going on in North Dakota right now that are culminating with our delegation, with the opportunities to get these people up here, with the R&D our coal companies are putting into it. And it seems to me if there is going to be a new coal plant built in the country, it'll need to be built here. So that's a long answer to your question, but I think we're to the point now where it's the end of the third quarter and we need to get a coal plant on the drawing board, otherwise there won't be coal around in 40 years. That's my soapbox for today.
To your point on the leasing, though, a sad thing about that is, the majority of their concern with the leasing is areas where they hold vast tracts. In North Dakota, it's just a few small tracts here and there, and in none of those instances does the federal government own the surface. So it should always be emphasized, I think, that the surface gets disrupted anyway. There's roads and ponds and soil storage and things occur there. But the part of the federal government, basically the administration, that is fighting coal and dragging these leases on and on forever, are focused on those vast tracts in places like Montana and Wyoming, and that's why they scheduled no meetings here, because these are almost incidental to them.
And listen, Dave, if you want to set up a time to visit with Secretary Mueller when he's up here, he's a good guy. He's got a really good pulse on what's going on with coal around the world and in the country. He came from industry before he got this job, and he's had it a couple of years.
So that's a possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. He welcomes the opportunity. I mean, he's out here trying to promote coal.
Probably better than Trump.
Well, you never know. I mean,
Trump might give us some media available. Maybe.
You think that'd be awesome?
I don't. I won't bet on it. So you talk about all these riders.
Yes, sir.
So if a utility had severe damage because of weather, would it be a riders on the storm?
Yes, it would.
I knew there was a pun going. I just knew it.
I mean, I listened to the Doors all weekend. So.
Alyssa, anything?
She's wondering who the Doors
she's
are.
Wondering, she's wondering.
I know who the Doors are. Born in the 80s.
When?
90. For Otter Tail, where exactly in North Dakota is there?
Do they serve?
Yeah, do they serve?
The largest city they serve in North Dakota is Jamestown. Okay. And you'll take a lot of these Jamestown, Botno, Rugby, probably Langdon. I can give you
Devil's Lake,
there we go. Basically, if you look at it, our larger cities in the east that are not eastern half of North Dakota, take out Fargo, Grand Forks, and Minot, the rest of those cities would be served by Otter Tail. In the west, you can take the larger cities are going to be served by MDU, Bismarck, Dickinson, Williston. And the co-ops would fill the rural areas and some of the outskirts of the cities. So, yeah, to your viewing area, there would definitely be people in your viewing area that are Otter Tail.
Washburn, I think.
Isn't
Washburn one of them?
Sure. I would think they'd be Washburn and be Otter Tail. Mm-hmm. They're right on the end of their line.
All right. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We will adjourn for 10 minutes and then be back for a fairly extensive admin agenda. Thank you.